70% chance.
Hello, welcome, welcome, everybody. I'd like to gavel the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. My name is Frank Hornstein. I'm the chair. And we have four items on our agenda today. First, we're going to have introductions of our members and staff, a quick review of our rules and procedures, and then the main event is going to be an overview from our research staff, our very able research and fiscal staff, a little introduction to transportation policy and finance, and which is going to be an ongoing process for all of us. I'm very happy to chair this committee. We have a real nice combination of transportation veterans, other veterans of the legislature, and then some newly elected folks too. So it's a really nice combination of people on this committee. So we did send out a little letter last Friday. Want to do something, Representative Kosnick, welcome. We wanted to do something a little different in terms of introductions rather than just folks talking about their, mentioning their name and district. Maybe a little something about transportation issues in your area or things you'd like the committee to address in general. That would be very helpful, I think, as we start and as we get to know each other. So why don't we start moving from Representative O'Driscoll around the horseshoe here and then and then we'll start with our next agenda item after that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you referred, I'm a veteran of the legislature, but not a veteran of this committee. And this year I had an opportunity to shift up my assignments a little bit. For the last 8 years, I've been in government operations, and I've always had a passion for transportation. And I thought this is the year. So here I am, Mr. Chair.
Anything in Sartell or the greater St. Cloud area transportation-wise that you're most interested in?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if we have time for all of that, but we'll get into that at some point in the session, I'm sure.
All
but one of the things that's very important to greater Minnesota is certainly farm-to-market roads, where we've got an aging infrastructure, and I see that the commissioner designee of the Department of Transportation has also indicated that Minnesota infrastructure is an important priority for the governor's office. I can assure you that that's an important priority for myself as well.
Fantastic. I look forward to working with you on that. Representative Heinrich, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative John Heinrich from Anoka in Ramsey. We have Highway 10 running through Anoka and Ramsey there, and looking forward to working on a third lane and getting rid of some stoplights so we can have traffic run smoother on Highway 10. Also, another concern of that community would be Highway 47. I have a background in my civilian job is in asphalt and concrete, so I'm looking forward to learning more about transportation and being a benefit to this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Welcome, Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. I've enjoyed being on this committee. I can't remember if it's 4 or 6 years, but it's been a great education, so I love it. But I guess I have a few issues. I've been very interested in transit, and I'll just say efficiency in transit. You know, there's limited dollars in this area of transportation, so I want to see more information from both Metro Transit and MnDOT. And then a big concern is just where we're at with our metro highways. I do like the MnPass. It's coming through Lionel Lakes. I serve up in that area, District 38A. And so that'll be fun to see, you know, as it's developing and easing the congestion out there. Thanks.
Excellent. Representative Petersburg, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate being back with you again. I've been here for 6 years, and it's been very educational. I represent Otonawasika down south of here, and I've been on transportation committees for all three terms that I've been here. This is my fourth. Some of the things that I think really have to be in the forefront is that I believe we're right on the cusp of the next revolution, and I think that's going to be a transportation. I think it's going to be very similar to the communication revolution that we had with cell phones, and I really think government has a tendency to be behind the eight ball when it comes to new and innovative technologies, and I'm afraid transportation with the disruptive service of autonomous vehicles and other innovations, we want to be careful not to get too far behind. And, of course, before my successor here says anything, Highway 14, we finished in my area, but we still have another section left to go to really finish that corridor, and I'll let Paul talk more about that.
Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations on your chairmanship. I somewhat begrudgingly turn the gavel over to you. You know, that's the way life is around here. So I look forward to working with you on the Transportation Committee. It's just 2 short years ago that I came to this committee for the very first time as a member with a gavel in my hand. So it was an interesting endeavor. My vice chair from last year, Representative Petersburg, did mention Highway 14. And, of course, there's a chunk of Highway 14 from Nicollet to New Ulm that I am personally very interested in and intend to promote to the best of my ability. But along with that, there is a handout titled Items to Revisit in 2019. I'm not going to read through them at this point in time. But this is a list of items that were either in the omnibus bill that was vetoed at the end of session or other bills near the bottom that were passed as single-item bills and were also vetoed by the governor. These are all issues that were negotiated to an extent, and while I don't expect that we're going to recreate the bill, I do believe these issues are still important and that they do deserve discussion.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, thank you, and you did a fantastic job last year, so I have big shoes to fill. And I want the committee to know that Representative Froegelsen and I have an excellent working relationship. And, you know, what I love about the Transportation Committee is it's been, you know, historically very bipartisan, very civil. We definitely have some disagreements, but I think everyone's got roads, bridges, and transit issues mostly in their districts. And so we work well together, and I do appreciate all of your work. And, in fact, just this morning I had Mr. Burris, I sent him a note saying, you know, let's look at the perhaps non-controversial items in the transportation bill last year that we reached consensus on and see if we can put together either separate bills or a larger bill together and get that moving so we can get this through the process and on the governor's desk, so the hard work that you did last year that we can get off the table very quickly this year. So I do really appreciate this. We'll take a look at it. You know, Mr. Burris will have some items also to present, and I do share your interest in getting this going. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative West, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nolan West. I represent Blaine. And number one priority for me, actually, in everything, is getting Highway 65 rebuilt. I mean, there's finally a study looking at Highway 65 and Representative Benardi in my district, the whole length there, and it is a complete and utter disaster. And I hear about it every day, so hopefully we can get that resolved in this session. That would make me happy as a clam.
Okay. Well, great. And then we do have some staff. We'll have the members introduce themselves. We definitely want to hear from staff and our pages as well. So our Vice Chair Tabke, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brad Tabke, I am a new representative from Shakopee, and I'm honored to be here as Vice Chair, so I look forward to working with everyone. Biggest thing in Shakopee, transportation is our number one issue, so that's why I'm really happy to be here. We've got very few lanes that go across the Minnesota River into Scott County, and Highway 169 is constantly under major congestion to failure. And so really want to work on not just lanes, but also other options for people to use with bus rapid transit. There's a 169 bus rapid transit study that's nearing completion now, and really want to work together with everyone to help bring that to fruition. So excited to be here, so look forward to working with everyone.
Thank you. Representative Elkins, welcome.
Thank you. Steve Elkins, freshman from Bloomington, and we're most of the things that I've been advocating for 20 years have been financed or built last year. So the 494 MinPass.
You can help the rest of us out.
That's yeah. Yeah, 35W 494 interchange, both corridors of commerce, and then we just cut the ribbon on our westbound on ramp onto 494 at East Bush Lake Road. Implemented a safety improvements along Normandale Boulevard with the TAB grant. I don't have to worry so much about what I'm bringing, about bringing home the bacon. The things I really want to work on are things like the connected and automated vehicles. There is actually a lot of scholarship going on in Minnesota right now related to that, and I'm trying to spend a lot of time staying on top of that. I've signed on to the hands-free driving bill, which I hope we can get that passed through very quickly. And then looking at, you know, longer term, I really would like to see us do some work on using the electric vehicles as a pilot for a vehicle miles travel tax to replace the gas tax over time.
Thank you. And I just wanted to mention to your and Representative Petersburg's points about automated vehicles. That's definitely something we want to take a look at. And I've asked MnDOT when they come in on Thursday to, you know, set aside a little bit of time in their overview in terms of what they're doing. They had a special task force on that. But we'll spend time in the committee on that, and I'm looking forward to some perhaps some good bipartisan legislation on how we can move forward on that. So thank you. Representative Koznick, great to see you.
Welcome. Great to see you, Mr. Chair. It's an honor to be at your committee now. And sitting on the other side of the room, I normally used to kind of sit over here to try to sit by you, but
yeah.
I don't think that'll be possible this year. My name is John Koznick. I'm a representative from Lakeville, about 25 miles south of here. I appreciate the chair's support and the support of the committee over the last couple of years on helping us finish the Orange Line funding that became available from the federal this year, so that'll be important. Congestion relief to the commuters in the Lakeville and South Metro area. It was also an honor to partner with you on the Lake Street Interchange and some of the work that's being done on 35. And so I appreciate the tone of collaboration that you've set for me as I came into a freshman. So it's happy to have you as a chair. Not quite as happy as when Chair Torkelson was there, but
that's fine.
But I look forward to the committee. Lakeville is home to one of the most successful industrial airport industrial parks, the Air Lake Industrial Park. We have it's close to the freeway. We have rail. Of course, at the airport, we have airplanes. But hopefully in the future, we may also have some bus service there or something, kind of a longer-term project that we can do, and maybe with the second phase of the Orange Line, that'll come to. Another need that we would have to relieve congestion, we have one of the most successful commuter express lines coming to downtown Minneapolis. We would like to see if we can replicate that coming to downtown St. Paul. Would be a good relief for the South Metro area. And then one of the bills that we'd kind of worked on was Metro Mobility Service. The taxpayers in Lakeville are currently contributing to the taxing service district, but yet we don't have the Metro Mobility Service in all that area. So hopefully real soon this session we can put an end to our taxation without mobilization.
Thank you. Well, and thank you for mentioning that as well. There are lots of issues, as the folks on the committee last year know, with Metro Mobility, and there is a structural deficit, and you know, how do we get those services, and not only to Lakeville, but to people who need it around the region. So thank you for raising that. Representative Richardson, welcome. Welcome to the legislature and the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. My name is Ruth Richardson, and I represent District 52B, which includes Mendota Heights, Invergrove Heights, Sunfish Lake, and Northern Eagan. There are a few road projects in Invergrove Heights that I know that are a priority for my district in the northwest corner, including an area near Highway 3. Metro Mobility is also something that I'm looking forward to being able to talk more about within this committee as well. My background is in disability rights and services, and so those are definitely important issues that I hope to be able to talk about here.
Thank you. Representative Joachim. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Cheryl Joachim. I represent Hopkins and St. Louis Park, and I guess I just more of a comprehensive priority of looking, truly looking at funding a comprehensive multimodal transportation system with a focus on transit, especially transit in our greater Minnesota growth areas. I know they're really hurting out there, and we need to figure out a way that we can make sure we're spreading that money around. Thanks.
Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent a couple of neighborhoods in St. Paul, the cities of Falcon Heights, Lauderdale, and most of Roseville. If you've been to the state fair, you've been to my district. And you will only hear from me about transportation alternatives, because in the area of transit and passenger rail, we are falling behind our Midwest economic competitors. There's a group called All Aboard Minnesota, who I hope we can have in some time, because they can teach us about the importance of passenger rail to the economic health and competitiveness of a region. We have much to learn there, and we are, as I said, falling behind Wichita, Kansas, and cities in Texas, and the conservative state of Indiana. And then, of course, the extension of North Star to St. Cloud, which, again, would help with a regional system. So those are my areas.
Thank you. And you know, Representative Hausman has been on this committee many, many years, and we'll look to your wisdom and experience quite often. Representative Mason, good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Sandy Mason. I represent 51A, which is most of Eagan west of 35E and all of northern Burnsville. And I kind of have my wish list here, if that's okay. In my first term, we did pass the Comprehensive Transportation Bill, and I am hoping we get that done this year with our new freshmen. In my area, that's probably the most exciting thing that's happening right now is the work that's being done on 35W and the looking forward to the Orange Line. And again, I know we need to do a lot more about expanding transit and particularly dealing with metro mobility. And in meeting with one of my cities, Menlarge was brought up again, so I know we need to deal with that. And my personal pet thing is we need to be looking at the striping on our freeways, that they are become a little bit more brighter and durable. That, as I said, and I'm driving on 35E every day, and I can tell you the striping is awful.
Okay. Representative Wolgamott, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fellow members, my name is Dan Wolgamott. I am the representative from District 14B, located in the St. Cloud area. And it is with great pride that I would like to talk to you about echoing the sentiments to bring the North Star commuter rail from Big Lake to St. Cloud. If we build it, they will come. We absolutely need to get this transit project to the regional center in central Minnesota, home of CentraCare, one of the largest healthcare providers in greater Minnesota, home of St. Cloud State University, St. Cloud Technical Community College. It's a project that will really benefit everyone in the central Minnesota area and throughout the state, from seniors to students to our workforce. We have workforce issues that this will help out. I really don't know why it stopped in Big Lake to begin with. My wife is from Big Lake, and even she thinks that it should go all the way to St. Cloud. So I'm excited to be working with you on that and the other important transit and road and bridge projects in each of our districts.
Thank you. We thank you very much. So we have a couple of folks that have joined us as well. We'll start with Representative Nelson, and we also have Representative Bernardi as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dan, we can have a discussion sometime. I was here when it went through, when that went through, and the reasons why it stopped there are multiple and many, and basically it was so we could get the federal funding for that. But I'm Representative Michael Nelson. I represent District 40A, which is the southern half of Brooklyn Park. And you wanted us to talk about projects in our area. I think the one's not really in my area, but it affects my area a lot, is the finishing up of Highway 610, the intersection at 94 where it comes. You can go north on 94, but you can't go south on 94 when you're going westbound on 610. So we need to finish that intersection to make that a full-functioning intersection. And the other one is, unfortunately, was in the news this morning, is 252. I know there was money in the bonding bill last year for 252 to take the stoplights off and make that into a freeway north of 694 to the river. Last night there was an accident where somebody crossed against the lights and was struck and killed on that intersection. The world was shut down last night for a period of time, but that's something we need to
make sure that that continues. I know the funding's there. I was understand MnDOT put it off for starting it for a year because it competed with a couple other north-south routes that they didn't want to have multiple north-south routes closed down. And I understand from my the City of Brooklyn Center that there's some issues with additional funding that the city needs to come up with for that intersection at 66 that's just north of 694. But we need to get that done. I mean, that I know the history on that, too, from living in the area, why it didn't get built as a freeway in the beginning, where it should have been. But that's another discussion that I've had multiple times with my local cities.
Thank you. And you know, Representative Nelson and I were both elected the same year in 2002. And I think I've been on this committee every term since then. I think you've been all but one. You're a great veteran that we'll be relying on as well.
Mr. Chair, when I was chairing a committee that met at the same time, and I said to somebody, I might be schizophrenic, but I still can't be in two places at once.
Yeah. Well, you're here, and we're glad you are. And then Representative Bernardi, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to serve on this committee with these fine members from both sides of the aisle. I've done a lot of work working on together because I've had to, mostly because I've been the minority, but that's basically been my career. I've only served in the majority. This is the second time in seven terms. So I really appreciate the work that our department does, working on a multimodal transportation system that so we have a healthy economy and environment, and as well as there's one more, MnDOT help, I need a lifeline. The economy, health, and the environment, and I've worked a lot on those things. When I first started working on it, there wasn't work really being done about the environment as far as really making gains in MnDOT in performance measures. So that's something I'm very interested in. And working on the Higher Education Committee, we're going to attract people into the state for our future workforce and for students when we have a multimodal transportation that serves all people. And then in my district, University Avenue, and over a 18-month period, nine people had been killed. Most of them were pedestrians. We have, MnDOT has done an initial audit. It's very rudimentary, but there's going to be good things that come out of that. There needs to be more system planning done in that area. And since then, people have been killed on in that area again, as I understand. I just heard someone report south of this area. So anyway, that's something that's really important that we need to address. And then I work on a lot on asset management, remaining service life, performance measures, and accountability. And so that's always important to me in what we do. And we really need to have a funding package that we can really create the multimodal transportation system, maintain the system we have, as well as modernize our current system. And then just wanted to mention I serve on the Governor's Advisory Council for Connected and Automated Vehicles. I've learned a lot, and I'm happy to report that it's a comprehensive view on how to address how we can use this automation to benefit not only cars and the infrastructure, but really how do we use this to impact people's lives and to make transportation better for Minnesota. So that's the work that I've been doing, and I look forward to serving with all of you on this committee.
Excellent. Thank you. It's good to have you on the committee. So we'll do, before we get to staff, I suppose I should let you know my priorities and where I'm from. The area I represent includes parts of downtown and southwest Minneapolis. So if you travel west from here on either I-94 or 394, you're traveling through my district. So obviously the condition and safety of those two very, very important highways are of concern to me and the people I represent. I also have 11 Metro Transit lines that bisect the area I represent. And so improvements in local bus service are a very high priority for me as well. One of the arterial bus rapid transit lines that Metro Transit is considering is along Hennepin Avenue, and that's in my district in South Minneapolis through Uptown. So I'm concerned about that. I also am interested in sort of the nexus between climate and transportation. You know, the transportation sector is the fastest growing source of greenhouse gas emissions. And so electrification of our infrastructure, our transportation infrastructure, is something I hope that we can explore together here. I think there is some bipartisan interest in electric vehicles, and hopefully we can advance some of that as well. And I also have the Southwest Light Rail on the west part of my area, and on the south we also have, it's a little bit to the south of my area I represent, but we also have, Highway 62, which has had some improvements lately, and then just to the east is I-35W, and of course, about 35W right now. So lots and lots of transportation and transit related issues in the area I represent. So with that, let's start with Mr. Marble, and then we'll kind of go around and anything you want to share with us. I know in addition, he's a big Twins fan, but any other information you want to share? You've been a veteran of this body for many years.
Yeah, I've been here since 2007. I've done the transportation the last 4 years, so I have not much of a voice today, but I was the committee administrator for Representative Torkelson for the last 4 years. I'm from Hopkins, and Representative Joachim's district. We had kids that went to school together at Hopkins, and look forward to working with you.
Mr. Howe.
Hi. Mr. Chair, members, my name is John Howe. I'll be serving all of you as the committee administrator. Very excited to be here and to get to work. Originally from Green Bay, Wisconsin, but have lived here after going to the Twin Cities.
He gets that. He gets the Green Bay and the John Sterling Howe stuff a lot.
Just make note of, unfortunately, no relation. But, excited to be here.
Welcome. And then, 11 years in the AG's office.
That's right. Yeah. Prior to this, I served 11 years in the Minnesota Attorney General's office. So a variety of issues. Hope to bring some of that knowledge here, this process.
Welcome. Ms. Stephen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Claire Stephen. This will be my second session here at the legislature. I worked with Frank last session as well. And I'm really happy to be here. I worked on the campaign side a few times, and I also work for Representative Heather Edelson. So if you ever need me, I'm at 545.
And let's see, yes, our researchers.
My name is Jennifer Nelson, and I'm the DFL research staff for this committee. So I know I'm just meeting a lot of you. This is my first session here with the caucus. And then, I'm originally from Morris, Minnesota, and now I'm down in the cities, so I've had a lot of experience with a lot of the different transportation. I live in Connie Bernardi's district now, so I've had the fun of being the pedestrian crossing university that I used to take the bus. So, it's a crazy, but I'm glad to be here.
So. Thank you. And then we have two pages for our committee, if you all would like to introduce yourselves.
My name is Thomas DeGray. I'm a returning page. I was here for the latter half of last year. I'm originally from Minnesota.
Did you have Mr. Pulaski for government?
I did.
Oh, okay. Okay. They'll be interested in some of your stories. Okay.
Hello, I'm Chloe Burns. It's my first year interning or being a part of this thing. Originally from Illinois, now I live in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm very excited to be here.
Great, thanks. And then last but not least, and we'll get back to you, but I did want you all to introduce yourselves. We are just blessed with two incredible nonpartisan staffers. They have worked with this committee for many, many years, work well with all members. They are smart. They are accessible. They work very, very hard, and they are, if you need help with anything, whether it's understanding a particular policy or complex finance issue or getting bills written, of course, we are just so fortunate to have both of you. You're a great team. And why don't you just share a little about yourselves? After that, we'll go quickly over the rules and then back to you all. So,
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Matt Burris with House Research, and I am a father of two. My elder is turning 12 today.
Wow, okay.
Telling everyone when I get the chance.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff, and this will be my seventh session here on transportation, and I also cover bonding, too.
Fantastic. So what I wanted to do before we go to our House nonpartisan research and fiscal staff presentation is just to quickly call your attention to the rules and procedures of the committee. They're all very straightforward, I think very similar to other committees. I think it's just important, and I think they're pretty much the same we had Representative Torkelson from last year. But, you know, it's important to note that we are going to have a 24-hour rule for amendments, and so please try to get those in ahead of time so we can have them posted so the public is aware of what we're doing. And then there was a, you know, it's kind of maybe not an official rule, but it is a rule nonetheless, and it will be strictly enforced, and that is that no one can be funnier than the ranking member of this. And, you know, that is a carryover from last year. And, you know, again, it's not in writing, but, you know, it's definitely something that we'll be aware of.
Well, that requires a response, Mr. Chair. You know, I've discovered in this brief week or so that we've been back, I'm not as funny as I was last year.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what's happened to me. Something happened that decreased my level of humor.
Well,
what's the right word? I can't think of it. I'm not funny anymore.
Well, I seriously doubt that, but you know, it is sort of an unofficial rule, and again, will be enforced. So, and just a couple of other things that I wanted to mention. You know, I've talked a little with Representative Torkelson about this as well. I think it's going to be important for us to, since this is such a high-profile issue, and you all have done a very good job of, you know, articulating both broader issues from, you know, autonomous vehicles to, you know, passenger rail to, you know, very specific issues in your district. It's important, I feel, for this committee to get out of the Capitol complex and to do a few hearings in different parts of the state, in the metro area, and clearly in greater Minnesota. And so we're working on a calendar of some of these, what we would call field hearings. We will hear from the public, but we might even be able to, you know, hear some bills. If there's bills of interest to you that are near you geographically, you know, we want to hear those bills close to your hometown. And we'll come up with a list of those. I would just say, you know, we have a challenge with both policy and finance together. This is the first time I believe we've had this in a while, or if ever, in the House in recent memory. What's that? Tim Kelly had it? Okay, so outside of Representative Kelly, we have not had policy and finance together. And so it's a challenge to get all of our bills heard in 2 days a week. And so we may be adding some meetings, particularly if we do these field hearings. I'm looking at perhaps Fridays in February, but we'll get back to you. And then if we do a meeting in the metro area in the evening, I think Tuesday is the best day to do that, then we wouldn't meet here during the day. That's just too much for you. It's too much for the staff. And we try to get those in the early evening or very late afternoon. So if you have ideas about where to hold these hearings, and specific locations, obviously, you know, committee members would really, hopefully we can be close to where you live in one of these. So I'm interested in getting your thoughts about that. And early next week or later this week, we can have maybe a draft plan with some of the dates of these hearings and locations. And again, you know, kind of near some of these transportation hotspots, clearly, you know, something near Highway 14, for example. You know, St. Cloud has a lot of issues. You know, these are some of the places I'm thinking about, you know, right now in some of our suburban communities and in the core city. So with that, I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. And please, again, contact me or Ms. Steven if you have some thoughts about where you think a good location for a field hearing would be. And, you know, again, we'll have to sort of think through you know, our budget and make sure that, you know, we would provide transportation, of course. This isn't going to be like the bonding committee, but, you know, we will obviously, you know, get you to where we're going in terms of these meetings. So for the next 55 minutes or so, I'd like to have our staff go over basically transportation policy and finance 101, just to begin the conversation, just so that we're all on the same page. You know, I've heard this many, many times, but I still learn many new things every time we do this. There's so much here to learn in terms of the jurisdiction of this committee. And what I'd like to do is have them each go through their presentations. If we have time at the end, we'll have questions. This presentation will be available to the public. And if you are not able to get your question answered here at the committee, you know, Mr. Howe will take your questions and we'll get them answered in writing from our staff. So one way or the other, and then we'll make that public as well. So, you know, one way or the other, we hope to get your questions answered. And without any more further ado, I believe that Mr. Lee is going to kick us off here with the fiscal piece of transportation. So welcome to the committee.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. So Mr. Burris and I will be going through the PowerPoint slides pretty quickly. Our hope is that you use this as more of a reference. But just so you know, there's a lot of different topics in here. A lot of these topics could take an entire hearing to flesh through all of the complexities with it. The goal with this presentation is just to kind of get a broader brush stroke of the different committee accounts and sort of an introduction to how highway finance and transit finance works. So going to starting with the highway side, it's important to remember what we're talking about in terms of the different jurisdictions that roads are under. You'll hear a lot for freshman members about the trunk highway system. That is state-owned and maintained roads, and that includes U.S. highways, interstate highways, and Minnesota highways with the blue shield. That's roads that the state has to maintain, it has to repair, it has to do all the planning and engineering for, and then there's other roads that fall under local jurisdictions that the state has a funding relationship for but is not responsible for the maintenance of. So that includes cities, counties, and townships. And this just shows you those different systems. So there's the county state aid highway system, which is a subset of county roads. So that's roads that tend to have a larger traffic volume and has a funding relationship with the state where the state provides some aid to maintain those roads. And there's also municipal state aid street system. But the important thing to remember about these state aid roads is that the state doesn't own or maintain them. It just has a funding relationship to help support them. An important place to start when you're thinking about the state highway system and how it works is that it's unique in the legislature and other areas in that the vast majority of the taxes and the way the money flows and how it is spent is spelled out by the state constitution and then further spelled out by state statute. So unlike other budget areas, there isn't a lot of latitude that the Transportation Committee or that the entire legislature has in determining how money is raised and how it is spent without changing the state constitution. There are, however, a few areas of general fund spending within this committee, but they are more with transit and parts of the Department of Public Safety, and we'll get into those a little bit later. And also, just to mention, the local roads have a funding relationship through the constitutionally dedicated sources. So this slide, and I know it looks a little small on your handouts, is a framework of that constitutional and statutory money flows. So at the very top, you can see the sources of revenue for the state highways, or for all state roads and local road aid. So it includes things like the motor vehicle lease sales tax, state sales taxes, the motor vehicle sales tax, the registration tax, the motor fuels tax. And then at the bottom, you can see the different places where this money is spent and how the sources get to the uses is mostly defined by either constitutional or statutory formulas. And I'm going to start in it kind of going through this chart with those sources. So there's three major taxes. They're all dedicated to transportation in some way, shape, or form. The motor fuels tax, the registration tax, or TAB fees, and the motor vehicle sales tax. And usually in the legislature, people abbreviate that to MVEST. So starting with the motor fuels tax, this is a excise tax on gasoline, meaning it's not a sales tax. It's a tax based off of the number of gallons that you consume of gas. So it's not based off of the price that's being charged at the pump. It's based off of the number of units consumed, and that's at 28.5 cents per gallon. There's also kind of mirroring taxes on different fuels that are like the gas tax, like natural gas or diesel, that are based off of a similar energy content. It's 100% dedicated towards road spending, and it is on top of a federal excise tax of 18.4 cents per gallon. So then moving on to the registration tax, this is a tax on vehicles registered in the state, and it is based on a sliding scale of the value of the vehicle depreciated over 10 years, and then there's a little bit of complexity with how that percentage works and fees. And like the gas tax, it's 100% constitutionally dedicated towards road spending. Then the third major constitutionally dedicated tax is the motor vehicle sales tax, or MVEST. This is a 6.5% sales tax that is paid in lieu of the state general sales tax. So when you buy a vehicle, you pay the 6.5%, but you don't also pay the other general sales tax. This is a little bit more complicated in that in 2006, this was constitutionally dedicated for both roads and transit based off of a formula that in the constitutional language says not more than 60% of the total revenue from MVEST can go towards highways and not less than 60% can go to transit. And since the 40%, thank you, and since the implementation, that's been the split between those two uses. This digs down a little bit deeper, so you can see on the table here 60% for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund or for roads, 36% for Metropolitan Area Transit, and 4% for Greater Minnesota Transit. So between the two of those, that's that 40%. Then on the next slide, this is another thing that should be in your packets. It's a bunch of bar charts that look like this. This is a history of the revenue from the three major constitutionally dedicated taxes. So this gives you a sense of how these taxes have been changed and what kind of revenue they raise relative to each other. So at the very top is the, and I won't go into this with too much detail, but at the very top is the fuels tax, the gas tax. Then below that is the registration tax. And then below that is the motor vehicle sales tax. And so in the motor vehicle sales tax, you can see that originally it was going to the general fund, and then it shifted over towards highway and transit uses, at first via a statutory dedication, and then after 2006 as part of a constitutional dedication. But sort of an important thing to note on the motor vehicle sales tax is relative to the gas and registration tax, this is a more volatile tax. So you can see it's a little bit more up and down. On the back of this sheet is just the change year over year, so you can see which taxes are more stable, which have fluctuations either up or down with the national economy. So again, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but it's but it should be in your packets.
Mr. Chair, it's not in our packets. Oh. That chart that you showed.
We'll get it to the members. So.
This PowerPoint is a little small to see it quite well enough, but anyways, moving on. So a fourth major stream of revenue for roads is the general fund dedication of some sales tax that had previously been going to the general fund, but in the 2017 legislature was dedicated mostly for roads. There's a few different components to this. One was the general sales tax on auto parts. So when you go in to get your car repaired, you pay sales tax based off of the replacement or repair parts. You don't pay sales tax on the labor, but you pay the general sales tax of auto parts. So That generated about, out of the total general fund sales tax revenue, that generated about $250 million a year at the time. And of that, about $31.5 million for the first 2 years would be dedicated towards roads, and then it increases in the tails at about $145 million. Then the next few dedications were the general sales tax on rental vehicles at 6.5%, and then an additional tax that before 2007 just went to the general fund, both of these did, on rental vehicles. And then a final component of the general sales tax revenue that was changed in 2007 but had also been changed prior to that in 2008 is the motor vehicle lease sales tax. So this is a tax that's paid sort of in lieu of the sales tax, but for leasing a vehicle. And the 2007 legislation changed the distribution of that. Before 2007, a portion of that was going to the general fund and a portion was going to two transportation uses. And subsequent to the 2007 legislation, that's all going to transportation sources, and you can see the list on the table there. 2017, sorry. On the next slide, this gives you relative scale of the motor vehicle sales tax, so it's just a hair under $100 million a year in revenue. And looking at some other funding types, so in the transportation area, there is use of debt financing, particular to the state highway system. There's a mechanism called trunk highway bonds, and that's essentially front-loading trunk highway spending for a few larger projects that then has to be paid back over 20 years. And there's also general obligation bonding, but typically that occurs in the capital investment fund. This is just a look at some debt authorizations in the last, going back to 2009 and sort of the different types. And the next slide is the debt authorizations going out to 2024. This next slide gives you a sense of scale of those major sources. So you can see the motor fuels tax and TAB fees are the highest. And then MVEST, you're only looking at 60% of that, so that's just the roads portion. But you can also see federal is a pretty significant amount. And then state taxes. One thing to note here is that this will increase a bit because this is just looking at the last fiscal year. So under current law, that sales tax amount will increase in the next fiscal year. And again, this is just another chart to kind of give you a sense of scale of where the money comes from for roads. So that is the sources. Now sort of on to how it is distributed. As I said before, so much of road spending and road distribution is constitutionally laid out. So the first place that the gas tax, the TAB fees, and the road portion of MVEST and these other general sales taxes go is to something called the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And you'll hear this a lot abbreviated as HUTD. So it contains those major revenue streams, and then it allocates between the state highways and local highways via a constitutional formula. So this is those three major funds that it moves money in between. So the trunk highway, county state aid, municipal state aid, street. When this language was being put into the Constitution, there was a little bit of flexibility given to future legislatures and the governor over how this money would flow. So there was essentially a formula of formulas placed in the HUTD saying that 95% of HUTD revenues have to be allocated to these three major to state highways and the two different types of local roads, but that there's a little bit of flexibility in this 5% set aside where the legislature every 6 years could decide how that is spent. Like if the legislature wanted to have more go to state highways or to local roads, there's that little bit of flexibility built in. This is that 95% distribution, so the vast bulk of highway spending goes to 62% for the state highway system or trunk highway system, 29% for county state aid highways, and 9% for municipal state aid streets. And this is cities that are over 5,000 in population. And then the way that the 5% set aside has been allocated since 2009 has been to town roads and bridges, and also down at the bottom of this slide you can see the Flex Highway account. That is sort of a term of art for for MnDOT to use to turn back state highways to counties or cities if MnDOT feels it shouldn't be on the state highway system any longer. So then the allocation within the county state aid highway and municipal state aid highway street funds is largely directed by statute. And this is one of those areas where you could have an entire committee hearing explaining how those formulas work and how those are allocated. And I think MnDOT will probably get into that a little bit more when they present. I also have, would hope it would be in your packet, it might not, but on this, and I think it'll be available, this sheet, which is called the Commissioner's Orders, it's basically an explanation of all those constitutional formulas and how much money is involved, and then it has further the distribution to every city, county, and the township distribution. So if you're interested in how much your city or county gets and how that percentage is calculated, it would all be in this formula. Yeah. Anyways, so moving on, just as a recap, the highway finance structure in the state is pretty strictly constitutional and statutory. Unlike other areas, there isn't a lot of flexibility. So one of the things that the legislature couldn't do without amending the Constitution is say increase the gas tax but have the gas tax only go to county roads. The legislature could change tax rates, it can change formulas, but without amending the Constitution it really can't change the basic flow of the taxes and the distribution. And also to note that there have been a few changes in the way that general fund works with transportation. And again, as I mentioned before, largely there isn't a lot of general fund spending in the transportation area, but that has changed over time. A few examples include the 2006 constitutional amendment to dedicate the motor vehicle sales tax for both roads and transit. In 2008, the dedication of some of the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue, and in 2017, the dedication of some sales tax revenues. Then again, this is just to reemphasize the point of the relatively restrictive constitutional parameters on transportation relative to other areas. And the most flexible funding sources in general state budgeting is the general fund and other state sales taxes. So moving on to transit finance, and I guess a point to make is that as kind of complicated as highway finance is, transit finance can be a little bit more complicated because the structure is a little bit different in terms of like how the money is going out. Transit is provided by local units of government in the metropolitan area. It's the Metropolitan Council, suburban transit providers, and some independent providers. And then in Greater Minnesota, it's provided by 46 different transit systems all over the state for various different structures and types. And another important distinction to remember in terms of transit that comes up a lot in this committee is the differentiation between operating money, so that's the money to run the day-in, day-out transit service, and capital money, that's to build either new transit ways or to do the kind of capital maintenance to replace buses and keep facilities working. So it's an important distinction just to remember in terms of the transportation budget versus the capital investment budget, although sometimes transit capital areas or capital issues can be in both. Another important distinction to remember is the difference between direct spending and statutory spending. And I think we'll get into this a little bit more when the omnibus budgets are released. But direct spending is when the state legislature needs to authorize a specific amount of spending in law every 2 years, or sometimes in supplemental years. So that's saying to this agency, you have this much in general fund to spend in this way, and without another appropriation, that's all the money the agency has to spend. And that's different from statutory appropriations, and that statutory appropriations tend to be sort of ongoing spending, and it can be tied to a specific tax. And we'll get into this a little bit later, but specifically to the motor vehicle sales tax, Greater Minnesota Transit and the Metropolitan Council receive that funding stream as a statutory appropriation. So the legislature doesn't need to act every 2 years to appropriate that money. It comes to them, absent any statutory change, with just how much that tax brings in. So a little bit of background on the state's roles in transit finance. So the state sets the statewide transportation taxes for transit specifically. That's the motor vehicle sales tax, MVEST, and the motor vehicle lease sales tax. It can also allow local option taxes. And particular to Greater Minnesota Transit, the state acts as a funding partner, but it doesn't run the transit systems that it's a funding partner to. And largely, when the legislature appropriates money to MnDOT to aid Greater Minnesota Transit, MnDOT decides which transit systems get how much based off of a formula. The legislature doesn't name, you know, this transit system and this city gets this much. Largely, that has been left to MnDOT. And that's a little bit different in the metropolitan area, where the state directly appropriates to the Metropolitan Council and allows a certain portion of that funding to be used for the suburban transit providers. So that's where the state is directly giving money to the Metropolitan Council to operate the transit system. And the Metropolitan Council is also a little bit unique in that it is both a political subdivision, meaning a local government, and also a creature of the state, meaning that its mission and what it can spend money on is mostly laid out in state statute. This chart probably can't see too well, but it gives just a feel for the general scale of spending for transit aid. And this is just on the state side, so this doesn't include federal spending or local effort. This is just state aid. So you can see the metropolitan area transit aid is a little over $400 million in fiscal 2019, and Greater Minnesota is a little under $100 million. This is a map of the Greater Minnesota Transit area, so you can see just about every area is served by some transit system in Greater Minnesota. And a little bit more detail on the funding sources for Greater Minnesota Transit. There's the general fund appropriation. There's also the motor vehicle sales tax and the motor vehicle lease sales tax. Then there are local sources like passenger fares. City and counties can levy property taxes to support their transit systems. And also local option taxes by counties can be used for transit, but they can also the spending decision is at the local level, so they can also be spent on roads sort of at the discretion of local county boards. And then there's also some federal formula grants available for Greater Minnesota Transit. I'll just go through this really briefly. This is just a sense of scale of, for Greater Minnesota Transit, the different funding sources. So you can see the motor vehicle sales tax and the motor vehicle lease sales tax makes up about half of the spending for Greater Minnesota Transit. And then you can see the state, federal, and local shares. And this gives you a sense of the different spending in Greater Minnesota Transit. Urbanized means the larger cities like the Duluth, the Mankatos, the St. Clouds. And then smaller cities and more rural areas. So then moving on to metropolitan area transit, and again, these are is an area that you could probably spend an entire committee hearing on, I think it might be a little bit useful to have a bit of a history of the structure of it. So originally, the transit system in the metropolitan area was privately owned and financed, as were most transit systems in the metropolitan area or in across the country, financed by housing developers and passenger fares. Then in the first half of the last century, between the 1920s and 1960s, that model wasn't really profitable anymore. And so sort of following national trends, the public bought out the transit system. And as an interesting little side note, the last manager of the transit system was Carl Polad when it was privately held. So since then, there have been a variety of finance structures and governance structures. Currently, the bulk of the transit system resides in the Metropolitan Council. That's sort of after reorganization of metropolitan governments in 1994. And up until the late 1990s, most of the public subsidy to operate the metropolitan transit system came from a regional property tax levy. And I'll get into that a little bit more. Since then, though, the vast majority of state support for the transit system has come from the either direct general fund support or the motor vehicle sales tax. And this is, again, where it's important to note that the general fund is something that's directly appropriated every 2 years, whereas the motor vehicle sales tax is statutorily appropriated to the Metropolitan Council. And as sort of a note on budgeting, unlike the Department of Transportation, where the transportation bill area tends to lay out some pretty specific ways that money should be spent, with the Metropolitan Council, most of the aid is not specified. So the state aid goes to the Metropolitan Council, and then internally the council decides how to spend that money. And we'll get into kind of what they spend it on in the transit area. So there's the regular route bus system, light rail and commuter rail, contracted services, which include Metro Mobility. This is both a state and federal mandate that there's an ADA paratransit type service in the same areas as regular route transit service, transit planning, and then the suburban transit providers. And on the suburban transit providers, and just quickly wrap up here, there's a few different communities that have service in lieu of Met Council transit service. And again, this how that is financed, I think you could get into more detail, but it's about $35.6 million a year. And this next slide is a map of that service. And just briefly go through the next slides. This is a history, I think you can maybe look at this a little bit later, of those different funding streams for metropolitan area transit, and what's general fund and what's MVEST. This is a look at how the share of the support for metropolitan transit. And then this next slide is how that money is spent by the Metropolitan Council between Metro Mobility, bus, suburban transit providers, and some of the other areas. I think I will skip over the capital slide for the metropolitan area, and so just suffice it to say that there's a few different revenue streams. Most are local. There have also been state revenue streams and GO bonds and some other spending. Moving quickly on to aeronautics. This sort of mirrors highway finance. There's a tax on air flight fuel, registration, and property tax. And this next slide just gives a sense of that spending. And then there's also a few other kind of odds and ends that's multimodal spending for ports, bicycle, pedestrian, and ADA-type improvements, which are largely funded at the local level. And then just to give a brief sense of the budget areas for this committee. So the jurisdiction is all of the Department of Transportation, part of the Metropolitan Council, and part of the Department of Public Safety. And the parts of the Department of Public Safety that this committee has jurisdiction over is the State Patrol, driver and vehicle services, and then some other administrative functions. And just very briefly, within DVS, this is a fee-based service that does all of the license and vehicle transactions and is supported by fees paid on those transactions. Another component of that is the Minlar's computer system, which, if you move to the next slide there, it was funded based off of a technology fee, and there's still a few continuing surcharges that funds that. And it's also been funded by supplemental spending from those other special revenue fee-generated sources within DVS. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Burris.
And thank you. And just so members know, we're going to have an overview from MnDOT on Thursday, and then a week from today, the Met Council, and then the Department of Public Safety a little bit later in the month. So all of these, you know, we'll be able to dive into this a little deeper. Mr. Burris, if you, I hate to rush you, but I know we're going to have a few questions. So don't know if you can get through yours by about 2:05 or so, and then we'll take a few questions, and then, of course, we have another mechanism set up if people didn't get their questions asked and answered today. So welcome, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chairman, members, Matt Burris with House Research. Yes, I can move through some of the highlights of the transportation policy realm, and some of these items have actually already been at least touched on. I'll be providing a high-level introduction, providing some examples and kind of a look at themes in some of the areas, maybe delving in just a tad on a couple of topics, but largely it's an introduction to the general scope to give you a sense of the Transportation Policy Committee territory. Mr. Lee had touched in a couple of ways on the agencies that are involved in transportation, so Department of Transportation, Department of Public Safety, the Metropolitan Council, particularly through its transit operations and planning, and then various local units of government, so referred to as road authorities, and when they're wearing their hat as road-type entities, cities and counties and so forth, transit operations and airports and ports are some other examples at the local level. There's a wide breadth of policy-type topics that come up from the standpoint of agency operations of these state and local agencies, and that ranges from administration to the kind of high-level mission and vision that's established in state law, down into the more administrative and procedural-type matters. The agencies undertake a variety of programs, and I'll be kind of listing a few of those out, a couple of examples of those. And the way those are set up in state law really varies. The statutory state law type requirements can cover things like eligibility and what procedures, or they can be left to the discretion of the agencies. Some programs leave it pretty broad and are set up more as competitive grants. Others are very formula-based. Generally, these programs are different mechanisms to distribute aid. So looking at the trunk highway system, the Corridors of Commerce is one of the sort of preeminent programs that was established in 2013, modified in 2017 following a legislative auditor report. That's an example of having eligibility requirements and criteria that are laid out in state statute, but then there's some discretion left to the agency in how to handle the scoring and project selection. Transportation Economic Development, or TED program, is another example of that. Mr. Lee touched on aid to Greater Minnesota transit providers. That's through the Public Transit Participation Program. An example of multimodal is through the Safe Routes to School program, which is largely capital investments to support non-motorized transportation to schools. A couple of examples are the MRCY program, as it's referred to, and this is generally geo-bond-funded assistance for freight rail. And then, again, this had been touched on earlier, there's several different aid programs for the local roads. So state aid is largely formula-based. There's a series of formulas beyond the ones that we had touched on earlier. And then there's funding for local roads and local bridges. That's primarily been through GO bonding, general obligation bonding. And then a small cities assistance program that was established a few years ago for those cities that don't qualify for aid under municipal state aid street program. The capital projects are central to a lot of what is done in the world of transportation. It's very capital-related or relevant. And MnDOT has a pretty complex and intricate project development process as far as how it goes about selecting projects. I'll just touch on some of the key aspects of that process. The first component is planning. MnDOT undertakes planning on an ongoing basis, and it's at various levels of detail and covering various modes. And that planning starts at a very high visioning, objectives-type level, moves into identifying and developing performance measures and how to measure where the transportation system is, and from there moves into allocating out and prioritizing how much spending is anticipated over a multi-year period for different categories. MnDOT also, as part of the planning process, but in other stages as well, goes into analysis of the various funding sources. Mr. Lee had outlined some of the key state sources. At the federal level, it's not just one big block of dollars. There are quite a few federal programs. Each of those can carry various limitations, and so it becomes kind of a matrix of figuring out which dollars are available for which types of projects. MnDOT also goes through an internal allocation process in figuring out where the dollars should flow to. And that kind of brings us into the programming phase or aspect of the capital project process. The standard process for quite a bit of the dollars under MnDOT's purview is undertaken largely, not exclusively, but largely at the district level. So it's a series of eight regional districts, the Twin Cities Metro, and then throughout the rest of the state. And that's where projects are identified. And then there are a number of specialty programs. Corridors of Commerce was mentioned previously. That's an example. Another aspect of the development process involves actually developing each project, and that ranges from kind of the scoping of, okay, what should this project involve? What are the limits? How long are we talking here? What kind of breadth? And then moving into the more technical aspects, as well as right of way, possible acquisition, performing environmental analysis involving stakeholders, figuring out funding sources. One thing I would note is that project development doesn't happen after some of these other aspects of project development or of the overall capital process. This is something that is sort of iterative and baked into both the planning to some extent as well as project selection. So you need to have some kind of general scope in order to start to select the project, and that then moves into developing a list of specific projects, identifying how much those are going to cost. And it can be somewhat dynamic on a year-to-year basis. Once projects have been developed, it moves into the bidding, contracting. That aspect of it then is primarily through private contracts. And then construction. Finally, following construction, there's the ongoing operations, ongoing maintenance. So far we've been touching on policy from a kind of agency standpoint. There's also sort of a thematic look that can be done in policy. So one of the areas is in motor vehicle registration. So that's where the tax revenue from the motor vehicle registration tax comes from, vehicle titling. Special plates is a topic that comes up with some degree of regularity at the legislature. Bills that would propose to authorize a new type of special plate. There are various classifications of motor vehicles in state law, and a set of vehicle as well as driver related regulations that follow from that. A couple of examples are listed here. Connected and autonomous vehicles are. Had been mentioned a couple of times in the committee earlier. That's something on the forefront, as opposed to past legislative action. Motor vehicle administration is through a combination of the driver and vehicle services and deputy registrars, who are appointed under state law and administrative rules to administer some of the registration, titling, title transfer tasks. Similarly, motor vehicles, another area is driver licensing. There are various classes of licenses that authorize operation of different types of motor vehicles. Minnesota, like most states, has a graduated driver's licensing system. This provides for some limitations on motor vehicle operating privileges for young and newer drivers, which then kind of expand over time. The realm of driver's education is another topic that has come up. For instance, requiring the driver's manual or written exams to cover specific topics of legislative priority. Similar to the motor vehicle side, administration for driver licensing is through Driver and Vehicle Services in the Department of Public Safety, but is really a part of a public-private hybrid where driver's license agents are appointed at the local level, and that can consist of local units of government as well as private business entities. An example of driver licensing activity in recent years is the Real ID Act of 2005. This laid out a series of federal standards for documents issued by the state and required for federal acceptance a state to issue compliant documents, particularly in boarding aircraft and accessing facilities that are secured federally. Those are both federal facilities as well as some other federally managed facilities like nuclear. The state response started with a prohibition that was modified in between 2016 and 2017 to move towards conformity with the federal requirements. And so today there are actually three different driver's license and ID card options that are available in Minnesota. One's a fully compliant with the federal Real ID Act. There's a second version or option that's non-compliant. And finally, there are enhanced identification cards and driver's licenses. Those are sort of a hybrid for border crossing under limited circumstances. Another field or aspect of transportation policy is the realm of regulations of drivers, driving rules, driver safety. Speed limit issues come up with some regularity, and I've just given a couple of other examples in the traffic rules realm. Motor vehicle equipment standards are to some extent laid out in state law. There are also vehicle standards that are set federally. And then motor vehicle traffic enforcement and vehicle penalties. In general, the driving rules carry a petty misdemeanor penalty, which is the lowest penalty level set up in the structure for penalties in state law. But there are some that move to higher, some violations can move to a higher penalty level, misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or even felony. One example to delve into just a tad more is distracted driving. And you can see the history here. 2005 was one of the policy changes in distracted driving that limited cell phone use for novice drivers. 2008 included a ban on texting and use of electronic messaging while driving, as well as a ban on personal cell phone use for school bus drivers. And then there were some modifications in 2015, largely involving penalty levels. Another area is pupil transportation. And there's a regulatory structure for transporting pupils that's involves a variety of differences from the requirements for drivers in general. So a heightened set of driver qualifications and licensing. There are various school bus vehicle standards, their equipment requirements, and there are some differences in driving rules. The pupil transportation area is somewhat under the purview of the State Patrol. There's an Office of Pupil Transportation in the State Patrol. Another area is in commercial vehicle regulation. Excuse me, I'm finding a little bit cold, so okay, stay hydrated. There's a distinction here to note between regulation that happens at the state level and at the federal level. And there's, you know, federal law involvement in a wide variety of transportation policy. It becomes a little bit clearer or less clear in some cases in the world of commercial vehicles. As a rule of thumb, the federal regulations apply at the interstate, so across state borders, and state regulations apply within the state of Minnesota. Quite a bit of federal regulation is incorporated for intrastate within the state transportation, but there are a variety of modifications. And This slide lists out some of the areas of regulation. And this area is covered both kind of a combination of MnDOT as an administrator of motor carriers, things like registration, as well as enforcement by the state patrol and locally by local law enforcement agencies. One topic that regularly comes up at the legislature in commercial vehicles is truck sizes and weights. There are kind of four elements to this, and plenty of detail below that, but just touching on these briefly. The first are dimensional type limits, length, height, and so forth. The second is a set of weight limitations, and these form the core of how much a vehicle can weigh on both state and local roads. And each of these actually applies to a vehicle at, kind of at the same time. So a vehicle could be overweight in one way, but not overweight in another. Then there are a few adjustments to those weight limits under some circumstances, seasonal being kind of the biggest driver of that. And then finally, there are some special permits. The bulk of the special permits are for transportation of certain commodities, but there are some others. Another area of legislative activity in the past is railroad safety and preparedness. And then finally, I'll touch on a few examples of overlapping purview between this committee and other committees in the House. You can see the list here, administrative rulemaking, as well as governance questions can be touched on both here and in government operations. MNLARS is an example of information technology systems that might see stops if there were a bill on that field in multiple committees. In a very general sense, penalties in criminal law issues that where the penalties are higher tend to move towards the public safety realm, and more petty misdemeanor type traffic violations tend to, in general, fall into transportation, although there can be overlap. Impaired driving issues have generally fallen more historically into the public safety realm, and then pupil transportation can cross over both. With that, Mr. Chair, we would stand for questions.
Well, thank you both for this very thorough introduction. If you're feeling a little overwhelmed, that's to be expected. We will have, of course, lots more conversation with agencies, with our staff, with one another. I have set aside about 10 minutes here if you have very quick questions and very quick answers, because I know there's probably a few of those from the committee. So if people just want to raise their hand, I see Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is better handled by MnDOT on Thursday, I don't know, but is it my understanding, are we up against the limit in terms of trunk highway bonds, and have we looked ahead at some point? I can remember a number of years ago when we anticipated borrowing that much, that eventually if you do a chart, we overwhelm the funding stream that's going to pay the debt service. And is that better handled by MnDOT on?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, so I think MnDOT would probably be the best to answer some of that. I will say the in the MnDOT Transportation Fund's forecast, based off of the current borrowing that has been allocated, as a bit of a background, there's a limit to how much in policy the state can borrow on trunk highway bonds, as the debt service to service those bonds should basically be no more than 20% of all state resources to the Trunk Highway Fund. That's a MnDOT policy. That's not a statutory requirement. That's just a policy that MnDOT has, that they don't want to issue more than that level of debt. So under the current revenue stream and under the current forecast, that 20% limit, state gets to about 18.3% in 2024. Assuming the current revenue streams and the current bonding authorization, and then it starts to decline after that. The how close we get to the limit, if that makes sense.
I have more questions, but I'll see if others
have. Okay. Well, and first, thank you. And just so we have MnDOT folks here with us, so please note that question. Any other questions, then we'll keep going with you, Representative Houseman.
I can remember, if any of you remember Al Junkie, he boasted all the time that rural transit was paid for 80% federal and 20% state, and he said, and we like it that way. So, in other words, he was saying they didn't have to have a lot of local effort. But in your presentation today, it looks like Greater Minnesota is now doing property taxes and sales taxes also for transit. They do some local effort.
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, yeah, I'm going back to, on my slides. So this is the slide with the pie chart that you're looking at in the PowerPoint presentation is from the operating budgets in 2017 for all the Greater Minnesota transit systems. There have been a lot of recent changes in the way that Greater Minnesota Transit's financed, going back to 2008 with the using the motor vehicle lease sales tax, and then in 2006 with the dedication of the motor vehicle sales tax. A lot of that revenue stream wasn't fully phased in until 2012, and then since then there's been growth in general fund appropriations for Greater Minnesota Transit. So there have been some pretty big changes in the way that's been financed over the last 20 years, I'd say. But you can see here that that of the local effort, that 17.3 cents or percent, I couldn't say how much of that is local property or sales tax revenue and how much is fares, but that's what it would be. That's where the, if you added those three together, that's how you get to that local effort. So
but it's there.
Wait, I do have one question. Well, we'll get to maybe have you do the last one, but Representative Runbeck had a question.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought I had come across most things in this area, but I'm seeing something for the first time. This sheet you have, municipal state aid street apportionments. So I didn't know, and explain a bit more about the statute then is telling cities for municipal aid what amount to spend in maintenance versus construction. And that's in the packet of financial things. Page 11. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's is that an issue ever? Is it pretty much accepted then that ratio is it's given it's good, it works, that kind of thing?
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, I think I might have to defer to MnDOT on that question again. Since I've worked here, I guess I've never heard the distribution or how the local state aid or municipal state aid street fund spending has come up as a topic. So I guess I don't know.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Burris might, though.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, somewhat similar to Mr. Lee, I don't recall having put together a bill that would modify how MnDOT has structured it through administrative rules as far as that split, if that gives you a sense of it.
Sure. All right, thank you.
We'll have, if there's no other questions, we'll have one last one from Representative Houseman, then I have a quick announcement, and then we'll adjourn.
You mentioned the Mercy program being funded with GO bonding. So if we don't do GO bonding, there is no other state appropriation going to them or any local or federal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, that's right. There isn't an ongoing funding stream for the Mercy program.
Okay. Thank you. We have time maybe for one more. If not, for what it's worth, we do have a quorum. I need to announce that. But I just wanted to let committee members know sort of the roadmap here, if you will, or transit way for the next several meetings. We will have MnDOT on and Commissioner Anderson Kelleher will be here on Thursday. And I just wanted to also give MnDOT a heads up. I would be interested to know how the federal shutdown is impacting transportation issues in our state. We have quite a bit of federal involvement, as Representative Houseman pointed out, both in our roads and transit. It's my intention that on Tuesday, the 22nd, we're going to hear House File 50. In our committee, that is going to be a full bill hearing, and that's the cell phone hands-free bill. And then on Thursday, the 24th, we'll have an overview from the Met Council. And then we're very tentatively on the 29th going to have a presentation from the
Society of Civil Engineers about their infrastructure report card and quite possibly